This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Later this month, the Federal Communications Commission will vote on dismantling the Obama-era regulatory framework known as net neutrality. Essentially, it would allow internet service providers to charge content providers or consumers higher rates for better, faster service, rather than offering equal access and quality to all. Depending on what news you're reading, the FCC's decision will usher in a new era of innovation, or it will precipitate the death of free and open internet. The undoing of net neutrality is the Moby Dick of FCC Chairman Ajit Pai. It was Pai's predecessor, Tom Wheeler, who in 2015 spearheaded the FCC's open internet order that brought us net neutrality and who joins me today. We're also joined by Nick Gillespie, the editor-in-chief of Reason.com. Earlier this week, Nick wrote, quote, "The panic over the repeal of net neutrality is misguided for any number of reasons." Tom, Nick, welcome to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
Good to be here.
One of the big arguments against the current regulations is that they do stifle investment and the innovation that comes with it. And the FCC issued a so-called fact sheet claiming that such investment has dropped since the net neutrality regime was enacted. Nick, is it true?
The fact of the matter is that during the era of the commercial internet, there has been massive investment in infrastructure, primarily done by private companies seeking to recoup their investments by offering better, faster, quicker, more innovative services. I think that will continue. The problem is the way that the rules were implemented. They were implemented at the agency level, and it creates, for the same reason that Tom, when he was in charge of the FCC, could turn on a dime and change the policy, because I can do that. And then Ajit Pai, who I tend to agree with in this instance, says, you know what, I don't like that. I'm going to change it back. And within, you know, it's something like five or six times in the past decade, there have been flips in policies like this. It creates regulatory uncertainty, which is never good in the long run. And this gets to a larger issue, that is, this type of policy probably should not be decided at the agency level. Congress has abdicated its responsibility to give clear direction, including whether or not the FCC actually has the right to be doing what it's saying it's doing.
Well, that's an excellent answer, although not necessarily one to the question I asked. On this issue of investments, the FCC claims that they have diminished. The ISPs are telling their shareholders and Wall Street analysts a different story, that infrastructure investments are in the tens of billions of dollars per company and rising. Are the FCC smoking gun investment numbers plucked out of context, Tom?
Here's what I've learned when I was chairman of the FCC, that there are lobbying statistics, and then there are what you have to report to the Securities Exchange Commission and to your shareholders. And they would come in and say, oh, here's how things are being hurt. But then they would go to their shareholders and to Wall Street and say, no, we're not being hurt. The CEO of AT&T talked about how after the open internet rules, they would, quote, deploy more fiber in 2016 than they did in 2015. Comcast has increased their investment. Verizon has increased their investment. The reality is that investments are staying steady. Even the numbers that the Industry Trade Association gave to the FCC show essentially flat numbers, and it's what they've been telling the street, that we're going to spend, oh, roughly 15% of revenues on investment.
One of the things that needs to be said here, and I don't know if Tom can say it because he's in a complicated position. You know, ISPs are not our friends. Mobile carriers are not our friends. The government is not our friends. They all have interests that they're going to mask and cloud with, you know, public helper rhetoric. But the fact of the matter is that certain basic ideas should be taken seriously. And one is that if regulations can change willy-nilly on a very regular and yet unpredictable basis, that's generally not good for long-term planning.
Nick, you're one of the leading voices, I suppose, in libertarianism, which is all about letting free markets take care of business more efficiently than a ham-fisted government can do.
I believe in a limited government, and I believe in maximum individual liberty. Thank you.
All right. Now, as I like to say, and I stop people in the street to bother them with this idea, one of the things that free markets are free of is conscience. History shows that without regulatory cops on the beat, business will always put profits and shareholder value above all other considerations, especially monopolies. ISPs are either monopolies or de facto monopolies in almost every market where they do business.
Okay.
Absent regulations such as net neutrality, why in the world would we trust them not to sell our private information, not to favor their content over competitors' content, not to shake down content providers and their own customers for fast lane service instead of slow lane service?
There is competition already. There should be a lot more. None of this is being addressed by net neutrality. And I think that's a much more important discussion to be having. And I suspect Tom and I probably agree more on that.
Monopolists have the following two things going for them. One, they have an economic incentive to make the decision that favors them over their customers. And more important, they have the technological capability to enforce that decision. And the consumer has no choice if they don't like it. In a non-competitive environment, what you need to establish are a certain set of ground rules. And that was what we did. So, Bob, I think the question comes down to who makes the rules?
Even monopolies have to often act as if they are in a competitive market, even if they have 100% market share. Because if Comcast starts doing the stuff that would violate net neutrality, if Comcast says, you know what, we're Comcast, NBC, Universal, we have so much content, we don't want people looking at Netflix, we want our stuff, we're going to degrade or even just throttle down and block completely Netflix, what happens then? Do people just sit there and take it?
Tom Wheeler, on the FCC fact sheet, it's asserted that ISPs did not and presumably will not charge providers or users for faster service and more bandwidth. But haven't the ISPs themselves said that's exactly what they'll do?
Under oath before the court appealing the last open internet rules, the Verizon lawyer said to the court, I have been instructed by my client that I may say that the reason why we are appealing these rules is because we intend to offer prioritized services and different levels of services. They used to say in all of their printed materials that they would never do it, the guys like Comcast and AT&T and others. It is pretty clear that we're headed towards fast lanes and slow lanes.
Can I ask, what is the nightmare scenario? What is the Hal Lindsey, late great planet Earth apocalypse, the rapture is coming? What is paid prioritization that it would be absolutely verboten under any circumstances?
Think about your cable system. If you like your relationship with your cable operator today, you're going to love your relationship with your internet service provider because the cable operator has the ability to pick and choose which services go on, what tiers they go on, and to tell you, oh, you know, you want that channel? You're just going to have to pay me a little more. That's what paid prioritization is about.
Will it be a better service? Will it be faster? For instance, say I am a film buff and I want to be able to actually stream very high quality video, whether it's from Amazon or Netflix or anywhere. And if I'm willing to pay extra money to dedicate part of my pipeline to getting the fastest, best HD, true HD quality, should I not be allowed to do that? I mean, is that a business model? And again, this goes back to my definition of net neutrality, which is that this is about regulating allowable business models for companies, which I tend to be against.
In 2007, Comcast blocked BitTorrent delivering licensed Hollywood product over broadband because it competed with their pay TV service. And I go back to the fact that They stood in the well of the courtroom and said, we intend to go out there and differentiate amongst services because we can, and we are the ones who will determine who wins and who loses.
One of the commissioner's big arguments is that in matters of consumer commerce, the FCC isn't even the right agency to do the regulating. If any bad behavior takes place, he says, the matter should go before the Federal Trade Commission. Nick, as someone who's, you know, not a big fan of regulation of any sort, does that make sense to you?
I do think that the Federal Trade Commission can do stuff about anti-competitive behavior, which is not always easy to see or to understand. So I don't have a problem with that, because the idea that the FCC has been some kind of great champion of the little guy is ridiculous. It's powerful interests in Washington, whether they're lobbying groups or whatnot, or they're political entities. That's what dictates stuff. When Comcast starts acting awfully, when Verizon starts acting awfully, when AT&T starts acting awfully, I don't think that you have to worry. The only good power that comes out of stuff is really through consumer choices.
The FCC vote is scheduled for December 14th, and it looks like, online freakout or no, at this point, ending net neutrality is a done deal, unless, Tom, what?
It looks like it'll be a 3-2 vote. And then what happens next is 4 to 6 weeks later, it gets published in the Federal Register. There will undoubtedly be an appeal, and the first test will be, does the court believe that the rule should be stayed, should be stopped from going into effect while the court determines the total legal ramifications? And that will be a 9 to 12 month kind of time frame.
It is highly unlikely that, given the history of the commercialized internet that we have all come to know and love and admire and rely on, that there are going to be these vast, quick U-turns where suddenly you show up and it's like, well, I can't get to that site unless I fork over $50. The long-term trajectory of the internet is towards openness and growth and innovation and new ways of doing things. If most people look at their personal experience with internet connectivity and mobile phone and internet connectivity being able to go through your phone system, it has been getting better, and it was getting better before the open internet order.
So, but I think Nick—
Tom, I'm going to give Nick the last word there.
All right.
Gentlemen—
You're the boss.
Tell me about it. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Tom Wheeler is former chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. Nick Gillespie is editor-in-chief of Reason.com.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.